Joining us now in the WTIP studio, WTIP's Kara Thomas.
Well, good morning, everyone. We're joined on the phone this morning by Tim Cochran, and he's with the National Park Service. He's the superintendent at Grand Portage National Monument. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Well, this morning we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the process that's getting underway with Isle Royale National Park, and I don't think you're directly involved with it, but you have a lot of experience on the island and very knowledgeable about the island. Just to let people know, the National Park Service is starting a process to come up with a cultural resources management plan for Isle Royale National Park, and it's going to be kicking off tonight with a public meeting in Minneapolis, followed by one tomorrow night in Duluth, and then there'll be a couple more in Michigan. First of all, can you just tell us what is a cultural resource management plan?
Well, I believe a cultural resource management plan is pretty flexible. In this case, Isle Royale is trying to look across the whole spectrum of the cultural resources that are there and try to prioritize to some degree of what it will be spending its limited amount of money and efforts on to protect and interpret.
Mm-hmm.
So at Isle Royale, that would include, there's a wonderful extended prehistory. There's archaeological deposits that go back 4,000, 5,000, and even some people believe 6,000 years ago, all the way to the present. So there is prehistoric copper mining sites. There are historic copper mining sites. There are former settlements. At one point, Isle Royale was its own county. There was a number of Cook County folks who worked there. The one little trivia fact is Jack Scott, who Hungry Jack is named after, was one of the first constables at the McCargo Cove mining settlement in the 1870s.
Hmm.
There was logging, quite a resort tradition, and of course a lot of us are aware of the longstanding fishing traditions there, and there was also resort homes, just like we would be familiar with in some of the interior lakes of Cook County.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did it become a national park?
It became in concept a park in 1937. It was not dedicated until 1945.
Hmm.
But it took quite a long while to purchase properties in that time period, and then, of course, World War II intervened.
Mm-hmm.
But the primary landowner was a logging company and also a mining company, a smaller one that had sold most of its land to this logging company.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were individual properties that were owned by primarily summer folks scattered all around the island. And those things, all those properties had to be purchased prior to the park being created, which is what happened.
Mm-hmm. So there's no private property out there anymore.
That's correct, and that's kind of one of the things that in the conversations that have appeared in the communications that have appeared in the local newspapers, there is no private property. They were purchased in that time period, 1937, I believe, to 41. Some were condemned, and about more than half of the folks that owned property, the small summer home, sold it outright and then left. And about half elected to sell their property at a smaller sum, and they were given life leasee rights till the end of the period of which the parents, and eventually it was extended to the children in some instance that were alive at the time of that sale. But you're correct. Technically, there is no private property on Isle Royale.
Mm-hmm. So they were allowed in some cases, or chose in some cases, to remain on their properties or homesteads or fishing camps for the remainder of the owner's life, in some cases the children's lives.
That's correct.
But it seems like people are still going out there and using some of those old properties.
Yeah, and that's the complicated situation that we're in now, is there are a few life lessees left. The majority of them that we're talking about that will be considered in this plan are what would be the second or third generation from those people that were alive at the time that the property was sold. And they've been staying on in various capacities at the family place, either in a volunteer situation where they would look after the buildings, or in some cases what the Park Service calls a special use permit.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's the majority of people that are going and residing at the island now are not life lessees in the sort of very narrow technical sense of it. It's the second and third generations from those people that sold the property or were alive at the time the property was sold.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a story in the paper earlier earlier this summer, or I guess in the fall, that several of these people had been sent notices from the National Park Superintendent over there, Phyllis Green, saying, get all your stuff out of the all your heirlooms out, and we're going to be changing the locks. And there was quite a scare that went through a lot of these people. Do you know anything about that, if that's actually taken place?
I know about the letter, and I know that quite a bit about the controversy because a number of people have talked to me about that. And I don't know where things are exactly as far as locks, that kind of thing right now. The intent of the letter, as near as I can tell, and some people may not agree with this, was to basically say that, you know, you are not the owner of the property. And in this case, it was not life lessees. It was these folks that are second and third generation you know, that property is owned by the American public, and that is true. However, they do have a lot of private things inside, heirlooms, keepsakes, things that are important to families. And so it was in this awkward situation of how do you handle the situation where the buildings technically belong to all of us, all Americans, but there are private things inside the buildings. So if you were going to let more people look in, potentially even stay in these places, the question was, how do you handle the private property that's in there, photo albums, artwork, et cetera?
I see. It sounds like kind of a complicated situation.
It is, and there's another group of folks, if you will, folks that I know that you and I are friends with, that is the commercial fishing families of Isle Royal, that are predominantly from the Minnesota North Shore, from Duluth, Grand Marais. And unfortunately, many of those folks and legalized were living on Isle Royal at the time that the park was created. But many, in fact, most of them did not own the property that they were on. They had been there for, some cases, two or three generations at that time. But when the legal proceedings began, many of them did not own the property that were there. Some were allowed to stay on and to fish, and many chose to do that. Some chose not to. And then when the lamprey hit us hard here in Lake Superior, commercial fishing at the island ceased, just as it did here on the shore for quite a number of years. And then quite a few people elected not to go back at that point. In some cases, the park was quite aggressive and pushed people out at that time as well.
And that was in the 1950s or so?
Yeah, 60s. early 60s as well, yeah. There was some pretty awful things that happened there,
mm-hmm,
at that time period, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess we have to wrap it up, Tim, but just to remind people, we've been speaking with Tim Cochran, and he's the superintendent at Grand Portage National Monument. We've been talking about the process that's just getting underway. The National Park Service is kicking off a cultural resources management plan process where they're going to be accepting public comment and developing a plan of how to deal with the extensive human history that is on Isle Royale, including the more recent history of the Scandinavian fishing families who some still remain and have ties to the island. Is there anything that you wanted to add this morning, Tim?
No, I would just, I hope people will weigh in on what they'd like to see happen there, and there are these public meetings. If Duluth is too far for folks tomorrow and they would like to talk with me, I'm happy to try to take that information and provide it to Isle Royale. It's just a time for people to really say what they would like to see Isle Royale look like in the next 10, 20, and 40 years. So hopefully people speak up.
Great. Well, Tim Cochran, his number at Grand Portage National Monument is 475-0123. And for information on the meetings that will be taking place, the listening sessions, you can go to our website at WTIP.org, or I think you can also get the information if you call Grand Portage National Monument. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thanks.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.